Can we turn, please, to Micah chapter 1 and that passage that I read earlier this evening? And we know from the first verse that the word of the Lord came to Micah. And being a faithful prophet of the Lord, Micah preached what the Lord had given him to preach to the people. It's not a very happy, popular message that Micah has to bring. And he knows he has to do it. He has no choice. He's a called man of the Lord. But that doesn't mean to say that he just does it at a distance, without feeling, without identifying to some degree with the people that he's speaking to. And we can pick that up in verse 8, where we see how Micah laments the calamities that are to come. Because this man has a burden from the Lord. And he has a message or a prophecy from the Lord. And Micah seeks, if you like, to underline the importance of his message. I will wail and howl. I will go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like the jackal and a mourning like the ostriches. It would appear that this man was so intense in his ministry that he would appear that he had no outer garments, which of course is a sign of mourning. And Micah goes naked, predating the judgment of an enemy invasion that will come up to the very gates of Jerusalem. Now, this is not talking about Babylon. This is talking about the invasion of Assyria that got as far as Jerusalem, but no further. Stripped and naked. Clothes ruined, if you like. In a way, he's showing the people what they too will be reduced to. A wailing like jackals. Mourning like ostriches. Now, jackals, I'm told, make desolate howls and screech during the night. And do not jackals inhabit the desolate places? Isn't calling, if you were to call someone a jackal, it's hardly a compliment. They indeed can make a really horrible noise at night. And then he goes on about ostriches. These people that he is speaking to, they need to respond to what Micah has said about Israel, about Samaria. He is to wail. Now, in those days, they had people that were professional wailers. And they were very skilled at it. And they were used at funerals. And one of their purposes, believe it or not, was to stir up sorrow in other people. There's a verse in the book of Amos, where he says there, the Lord God says this, Amos 5:16, there shall be wailing in all the streets, and they shall say in all the highways, alas, alas, they shall call the farmer to mourning, and skillful lamenters to wailing. And here he is, he's howling. The almost contention of double sorrow, bringing multiplied miseries to the people. And I'm sure what would have happened if you went to a funeral in those days. There would be a long trail of mourners. And what he's prophesying is there will be a long trail of mourners attending the funeral of a ruined kingdom. And of course we can read what happens subsequently in other passages of the scriptures. Her wounds are incurable. An incurable wound. What a tragedy. To actually have an incurable wound. Nothing can prevent an utter rout. And I would suggest, he's talking here, he's talking about Samaria, he's talking about Judah, but he could be talking about the United Kingdom today. Have we got an incurable wound in our nation? What does 2025 look to us? A law that will be allowed to put people to death? Laws that allow healthy babies to be killed on the altar of convenience? And so it goes on. Are we in an incurable wound? But I do believe the Lord had a purpose in this message for the people then, and he has a purpose in the message for the people of today. Samaria is senseless. They are impenitent. And they will die from the sword, from famine, from pestilence, and also in captivity. They have already filled up the measure of their iniquity. And that's why we need to pray so very, very much for the ones that we love who are not believers. Our friends, our relatives, our neighbours, wherever they may be. And we trust that not yet have they filled up the measure of iniquity. It's wonderful, isn't it? Even in a nation that it may well be and probably is under judgment, grace is still available. Men and women, boys and girls are still being saved. And why shouldn't that happen to our loved ones? Why should it be somebody else's and not ours? May the Lord put a burden on us, not just to pray for our own loved ones, but the loved ones of other ones. He talks about there, it has come to the gate of my people, to Jerusalem. Even to Jerusalem. Israel first. Remember, Assyria conquered Samaria, destroyed the city, took them into exile. And then they invaded Judah. And they took a lot of cities, caused a lot of damage. But they couldn't take Jerusalem because it was not yet time in the Lord's economy for that to happen. Talks about there in verse 9, for it has come to the gate of my people. Now the gate was the domain of the older men. And there they would sit and debate and deliberate the issues of the day. And it was also a scene of justice. Now there's going to come a massive threat to Jerusalem from the Assyrian army. They will come into Judah. He has come, a cruel enemy. The Assyrians were a very cruel people. This was a man called, or an army led by a man called Sennacherib, besieging Jerusalem. It tells us there in 10, tell it not in Gath, weep not at all in Beth Aphrah, roll yourself in the dust. Now of course, Gath was a Philistine city. And the Philistines, of course, were long-term enemies of the people of God. In other words, don't tell the men of Gath. If they're told, they'll give an excuse to have a go to their bitter enemies. The Philistines will know all about them. They must not allow these Philistines to hear the mourning and the wailing, because they will take great delight in it. Isn't that true for us today? That some people take great delight when the church is in trouble. I mentioned it this morning, the scandal in the Church of England with all the two archbishops and men allowed to carry on the ministry that should have been chucked 8 years ago. What do the people think? Ordinary people in the street. I'm sure they're disgusted as much as we are. Beth Aphrah. Actually, the name means house of dust. Or some people would call it dust town. And they will roll in the dust. They will indeed grovel in the dust there in Beth Aphrah. What a picture of sin, rolling in dirt and muck and dust. Isn't that what sin is? Today, people laugh at sin, don't they? There are dating agencies to encourage you to have an affair. Completely legitimate. What about adultery? Oh, we don't worry about that these days. I mentioned it before. Think of how many healthy babies will be killed in Eastbourne Hospital, or the Conquest, or in Brighton. Well, that's the law. Just goes on. We need to stand up against those that would legalize sin in our nation. And we must stand up when we perceive and see sin in the church of today. Do not have even a silent sorrow as you view the church and society today. Is our society a good society to be part of? It's a lot better than many I know. But don't we grieve? Don't we grieve over so much which unbelief and so much what I call liberal entertainment Christianity? You see, the Philistines had a great hatred towards the people of God. And believe me when I say this to you, the world has a great hatred against the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. And that is why it is so often mocked in public. Mocked on the television, mocked on the radio, and so on. And when one makes a stand, one comes under attack. Verse 11, you see, speaks of a place called Shaphir. Pass by naked shame, you inhabitant of Shaphir. Or it could be Saphir. This is a town of the tribe of Judah. Now, the Shaphir actually means beautiful. And it probably was a very beautiful place. And a very pleasant habitation. There are many places like that in our own land, aren't they? Very pleasant places to live. Nice small towns. Or pleasant villages. So different to the tenements and the tower blocks in the cities. But what will happen to it? It will become, if you like, unpleasant. It may well have been a splendid place, but will become deformed. I remember many years ago, well not that many, quite a few years ago, we stayed with a lady in a village in Somerset. A roughly normal sized village. And what happened was a lady in the village was murdered. And the police were convinced that the murderer was a villager, a local man. And so what they decided to do on this Saturday night in which the lady had been murdered, they decided to find out what every man in that village was doing that Saturday night. And what they uncovered was a whole catalogue of sin and degradation. This is in a nice English village. And so really, perhaps there are no really pleasant places to live. Zanan. Pass by. The inhabitants of Zanan does not go out. They didn't come out and help. They weren't interested one way or the other. And Zanan actually means to transfer or migrate. In other words, the people of this city will stay at home and watch their neighbours go into exile. Beth Esel mourns. That was a place near Jerusalem. They will be very busy in that city, lamenting on their own future. So they'll have no time for anything or anyone else. Isn't it true the most important thing you can give to anyone in this day and age is time? To spend time with someone, to listen to them, to share with them. And so often, it's time, isn't it? I remember when I was in hospital after my accident, and I was in traction, so I couldn't get out of bed for, nearly 3 weeks. And I always remember one visit, a chap came in, very nice chap, didn't mean anything by it, and he said, I thought I'd pop in, I got five minutes spare to see you. And I thought, I got 24 hours in here, mate. And I thought to myself, do I say that to people when I visit them? I just thought I'd pop in, I've got a couple of spare minutes. Hey, in my busy, busy day, I'm going to give you 2 minutes. You think, do I do that? And I thought, I resolved there and then, I would never ever do that to anyone. I trust I haven't since. We need to spend time with people. And anyway, we're getting old, most of us. I say most of us. And we don't do rush, nay, do we? Couldn't do it if we wanted to. So, having time. Not like this lot. They couldn't be bothered. They didn't have any time for anyone or anything else. But the same thing will happen to them. They will go down into captivity. Its place to stand is taken away from you. And there will be nothing left to cover them. You see, these cities that he's mentioning here in this chapter are all on the on or near the border with Israel. And their enemies, the enemies of Israel, will need to pass through them. And so he moves on. He talks about Maroth in verse 12. Again, that's a city in the tribe of Judah. Interesting meaning to the name. It means bitterness or bitter fountains, imagine. And what do they long for? They pined for good. They longed earnestly and patiently for peace, for prosperity. And what would make them happy? And that's, isn't that as much of our philosophy today? Why do people do the lottery? It's not to make Camelot, whoever runs it now, rich. It's to win the millions. Or a million. That's the answer. If only I had £1 million. If only I had this. If only I had that. But it doesn't, does it, make one happy? You and I know the only true happiness and joy and blessing in this world is in the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's why we worship him. That's why we serve him. And that's why we encourage others to follow him as well. But you see, disaster is coming down. And what does it say in verse 12? From the Lord. That will come with sword, famine and pestilence. And it will come down like sweeping rain to the very gates of Jerusalem. And notice it's from the Lord. It was allowed from the Lord as a punishment. As I say, the Assyrians got to Jerusalem having devastated much of the country. Jerusalem was spared, but not Morath. Nebuchadnezzar finally took Jerusalem and deported many of its people, of course, to Babylon. And all this, of course, is in the Lord's will and purpose. And whatever happens to us individually, it is all in accordance with the Lord's purpose and plans for our lives. We were listening to a sermon the other day on the internet, and he was going on about people that do all these things so that they can stay alive a little bit longer. And he said, it's a waste of time. The Lord already knows the date of your birth, and he knows the date of your death. And you ain't going to put 1 second on, no matter what you do. Instead of worrying about this life, we should concentrate on what's coming in the next life. He goes on to talk about Lachish in verse 13 again. That was a strong fortress town in Judah. And that was besieged by Sennacherib when he came against Jerusalem. And indeed, Lachish is the most important of these cities mentioned. And if we were to turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 11, we read how it has been fortified by King Rehoboam. Indeed, it was sought as a refuge for Amaziah. We can read that in 2 Kings 14, 2 Chronicles 25. And it is thought that Lachish was the first city in Judah to go for the idolatrous worship of Israel. You see, it was so near to idolatrous Israel, they took in, they imbibed this idolatry and sent it on into Judah and Jerusalem. Its citizens were the first to embrace the corrupt practices of Jeroboam. Sadly, they left the pure worship of God. Now, we are not perfect by far. But we seek, do we not, to worship the Lord in spirit and in truth? That there are certain things that we don't do because we don't believe it's in right to do those things. He's talking about harness the chariot to the swift steeds. In other words, you need to get away. Again, they're looking to themselves. We need to get away. We need to run away. Instead of coming together as allies. And it's so easy as a Christian just to hunker down and wait for glory. For most of us, it's not that far off. Probably a matter of years, a few years at the most. Why not just hunker down and wait for glory? Because no one's going to take my salvation away. But that's surely a wrong attitude, isn't it? We need to come together to oppose sin where we can, to share the gospel where we can. What a state of things there was in that town Lachish. To be the beginning of sin. To then lead others astray. And the Lord knows at whose door to lay the blame. Talks about in verse 14, giving presents. While giving presents to would-be allies was a form of inducement in the time of war. In other words, let's pacify our enemies with gifts. Let's be good church people. Let's do the things that the world wants us to do. Let's help here and help there, but we won't mention the gospel. We'll just leave a tract here or track there. But deceitful Judah is no longer able to depend on their support. Talks about the houses of Achzib in verse 14. That was a city on the coast below Tyre. It's interesting that the name means deceitful. Again, there is none more false and deceptive than a false believer. Acts said will prove to be a lie, a broken reed to the people of God. A lie to the kings of Israel. It's always a good question, is it, to ask ourselves. How do we match up in this regard? How is our integrity? How is our honesty? How is our reliability? And then he goes on to talk about a place called Marashath. Again, it's a fenced city in the south of Judah, towards the Dead Sea. It means possession of Gath. But the new possessor of this city will be the king of Assyria. And then Adullam, situated at the base of the hill. It was the cave, of course, that David hid when he was being chased by King Saul. And the city nearby, in a sense, evolved near to that cave. And even this refuge will be seized by the invaders. You see, the Lord raised up the Assyrians to rise and prosper and possess the cities of Israel and the Philistines. And also, of course, if you go back to verse 1, we remember he comes from Moresheth, a threat to Micah's birthplace. You notice he was not afraid to reprove his own people. Remember when the Lord went to Nazareth? Today, this has come true in your hearing, they wanted to chuck him off the cliff. He's only Joseph's son. His brothers and sisters are here. We need to be sometimes even direct with our own nearest and dearest sometimes. It's never easy. But sometimes it has to be said. And then finally, just looking at that thing, make yourself bald and cut off your hair. Now again, in those days, cutting off your hair, making yourself bald, was a sign of great distress. It was often practiced in the on the death of a near relative. In Amos 8:10 it says, I will turn your feast into mourning and all your songs into lamentation. I will bring sackcloth on every waist and baldness on every head. I will make it like the mourning for an only son, and it ends like a bitter day. And here he is saying, tear your own hair out by your own hands. You see, the desolation will be so great that Israel will become like a mother losing her children. Talks there, enlarge your baldness like an eagle. Now, eagles molt. And what it is, it's the process of getting rid of old feathers and replacing them with new. And while this process is going on, the body of the bird is very weak. And so, that could all happen to them. And they will go from you into captivity. Some of the children will be slain, others taken captive, others die of disease. And those, of course, in Israel that went into captivity never returned. they shall go from you into captivity. Now, I can't remember exactly the number of kings that Israel had, but each and every one of them was not a good specimen. But how patient the Lord was with them. Instead of coming in when Jeroboam took over way back, he allowed them to go until their iniquity was full. And the same with Judah. He allowed Judah to go on. They had some godly kings like Hezekiah and Josiah. But there came a time when Nebuchadnezzar brought God's judgment on Judah. God is so kind. And God is so patient. And we are living examples of that. He has spared many, many people to give them today, for example. How many people has he given in Helsham today the opportunity to go into an evangelical church and hear the gospel? I don't just mean us. Gordon Road, even perhaps a parish church, King's Church. And yet how many have just totally ignored it. The Lord is kind and he is patient. But one day his kindness and his patience will run out. And then people have to give an account for their disobedience. And as I say, I would again close by encouraging each of us to pray for the people that we have contact with. Particularly those that nobody else might have contact with. And pray for opportunities to share the gospel. And to be bold. And pray above all everything else that God in his grace and his mercy will draw them to Christ. What better New Year present could we have than one of our loved ones coming to Jesus, repenting of their sin and serving him for the rest of their days? Well, may the Lord help us as we think on these things.